This is Patricia Kullberg, and in honor of Black History Month, I would like to highlight the local history of civil rights activism by reading from an essay that I published in Street Roots to mark the 70th anniversary of the flood that wiped out Vanport. A link to the full essay is posted on the MOLE's webpage at kboo.fm. Vanport, the World War II-era federal housing project on the outskirts of North Portland, was built in a year. It was destroyed in a few hours, engulfed by a massive flood. But in its brief lifespan of 5 years, Vanport birthed a militant anti-racist activism that would supplant the politics of accommodation that prevailed in pre-war Portland. Vanport was sunk down in the rich, dark bottomland of the Columbia River floodplain with two shallow lakes and crisscrossed by sloughs. It was a mile squared off, utterly flat, and enclosed by four dirt levees. The only place to exit that swampy bowl was one road that climbed out on the eastern dike. You couldn't live in Vanport unless you worked for a war industry. Most worked in Henry Kaiser's shipyards. At its peak, the town housed 42,000 people. They came from all over to work for Kaiser. The majority were white, but by war's end, more than 15,000 African Americans had flooded into the area. The local African Americans, fewer than 2,000 total in 1940, were respectable folks who'd worked hard not to call attention to themselves. As described in a wartime study by Black scholar Robert E. Colbert in the Journal of Negro Education, they'd crafted a more or less congenial relationship with white Portlanders, which required a fair amount of looking the other way at local discriminatory practices. The local Blacks did not particularly welcome their new African-American neighbors in Vanport. They were especially fearful that the newcomers would disrupt the status quo, which, in fact, they did. The shipyard wages were eye-popping so long as you were white. In blatant violation of wartime federal employment rules, African-Americans were offered only the lowest paid and dirtiest work on the shipyards. It was Wyatt Williams, a prominent African-American lawyer in Portland, who helped the Boilermakers Local set up an auxiliary union for African-American workers. The auxiliary collected dues but provided no benefits. No collective bargaining, no grievance procedure, no protection against unfair discipline, and no pathway for advancement. Despite wartime labor shortages, Kaiser fired hundreds of African-American workers who refused to join the Jim Crow auxiliary. Folks didn't stand for it. Not Vanport or Julius Rodriguez, president of the local chapter of the Shipyard Negro Organization for Victory, a labor rights organization. Not Vanport or Lee Anderson, who sued Kaiser and the Boilermakers for the right to work as a welder. And not Vanport and Communist Party member Sam Markson, who was once arrested for being white in the Black section of Vanport, no kidding, and interrogated by the Red Squad, the unit embedded in the Portland Police Bureau to spy on local activists. The local NAACP threw itself into the fray, and so did Bill McClendon, editor of the People's Observer, who covered the conflict in Portland's only wartime newspaper for the African-American community. They were all part of the national Double V campaign, Victory Abroad Against Tyranny and Victory at Home Against Racism. In November 1943, the feds investigated the alleged discrimination and issued cease and desist orders. Kaiser and the Boilermakers ignored the orders. In March of 1945, the courts finally ruled in Lee Anderson's favor, the would-be welder. But by then, the shipyards were all but shut down. The neighborhoods of Vanport were largely segregated, illegally and by design, although the Housing Authority of Portland denied it. Not until after the war did activists force the Housing Authority to admit to their practice of keeping secret and separate waiting lists for African Americans and reserving certain neighborhoods for African Americans only. At the end of the war, white families blew out of Vanport as fast as they could, but most of the African Americans were stuck, not welcome in Portland, and not wanting to go back home to even worse conditions. By then, the Vanport Tenants League, or VTL, had organized to challenge the discriminatory practices of the Housing Authority and their failure to apply federal rent relief policies. They staged large, angry demonstrations and alerted the federal overseers to the Housing Authority's illegal circumvention of federal rules. They wrote letters and challenged authorities. They drew the NAACP and the newly formed Urban League of Portland into the fight. Eventually, they forced the Housing Authority to back down. The rain began toward the end of May 1948, a warm deluge. Winter's snowpack ran off the eastern peaks and poured into the Columbia River. The lakes below the western dike of Vanport swelled to twice their size. The western dike was, however, in fact, not a dike, but just a railroad berm. Shortly after 4 p.m. on Memorial Day, the sirens went out. The dike that was actually not a dike had burst. Within the hour, all the buildings were adrift in muddy, swirling waters. Cars and buses bobbed about like bathtub toys. Residents were stranded on the roofs. A chain of men in water to their knees pulled one person after another to higher ground. 18,000 persons were instantly homeless. Scores were injured. 15 dead was the official count. Most Vanporters lost nearly everything they owned. In the aftermath of the flood, the Vanport Tenants League joined with other activists to protest not only the lack of compensation, but the housing of flood victims in rotten conditions, in dilapidated trailers and former dormitories for shipyard workers. Meetings were disrupted, marches were staged, a caravan to Salem was organized, pickets were dispatched with signs that decried post-war relief for Europe, but nothing for the displaced shipyard workers. Vanport was never built to last, but rather to service the industrial needs of a wartime economy and in the process to maintain certain race and class boundaries. But Vanport activists and their allies took up the fight for a better future for their kids. With their mass demonstrations and pickets and marches and impolite disruptions of official meetings, they were the first to challenge the politics of accommodation that characterized the pre-war African-American community in Portland. It was these men and women who set the stage for the civil rights protests to come. This is Patricia Kohlberg for the Old Mole Variety Hour, and I've been reading from an essay of mine about the history of civil rights activism in Vanport.